God, judging my Skittles.
Grit and Glitter here, once again, in your earbuds. It's a weekly podcast we do. We talk about the power of women's wrestling. Sometimes we love it. Sometimes it frustrates us. Sometimes, best of both worlds, I guess. My name is Harley Vasquez.
My name is M. Fear.
And Mayday is here, too. This week on the show, we're talking about two big North American wrestling pay-per-views. We're going to start with Total Nonstop Action. Because of that, that's why Mayday's here. Because that's Mayday's bread and butter.
Yeah, we don't want to talk to Mayday specifically about
about decay. Specifically about the act of decaying.
Oh, I have thoughts.
All right, TNA Rebellion, they were on pay-per-view for the first time since January, only the second time this year. I do like that. They do like the TNA Plus events every month for their, not their Honor Club, their, or whatever, their subscription service. But they only do pay-per-view a couple of times per year. So I like that they're still keeping it to a handful of pay-per-views. Makes each one feel more important, especially since I don't watch the other subscription stuff. I just watch the pay-per-views. This one was filled with returns. Broken Matt Hardy is back. Santana's back. Sami Callihan is back. And that kind of leads us into the first women's match on the card. The pre-show was tag team titles on the line. Spitfire, Dani Luna, and Jody Threat defending against former champs Decay, Rosemary, and Jessica Havoc. It was back in January at Hard to Kill, I believe, when Decay returned as Rosemary and Havoc. Because up to before then, they were doing the Party Girl gimmick as Courtney Rush and Jessica, correct?
Yeah, they were the Death Dolls.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot they even had a totally different name. Yes. So January Decay returned. It's been 3 months. Has there... What layers have been added to that story?
None.
That's what... That's... yeah.
I mean...
No explanation as to why they switched back. Nothing, no kayfabe of like what happened there.
I'm trying to remember, but I don't think so. I think they just treated it like a big return. They were like, it's like a big mystery opponent, and then it's Decay. And they're like, well, what happened to Courtney and Jessica? And they're like, it's Decay. which is fine. Like, it's great to see them back. I was never a particularly big fan of the Death Dolls. I'd much rather see them as Decay. But like, for such a deep and at this point very long running lore involving Decay and the undead realm and who's going where and a sinister minister gets involved at certain points, and like I would expect some kind of explanation, but we never got one. They're just, it's Decay, they're back, please clap.
That was my thing, because like I said, it's been 3 months and they're back, and it's like, oh, here's Decay, the back is Decay, they're back challenging for the tag titles, which they've already held multiple times. And on a show filled with, hey, Broken Matt Hardy's back, and hey, Sami Callihan's back, it just feels like an overall vibe of like nostalgia for 5 years ago, which isn't far enough away for me to feel like nostalgic for it.
It felt like a match for a match's sake. Like, hey, we should probably defend the tag titles on this show, right? Yeah, throw a match on there. Like, there was no real build for it. They even say, like, this is their mandatory rematch clause. And that's the story. Like, there's literally no other reason they're fighting. It's because they're owed a rematch. So here it is.
That said, it was a pretty good match. And this is, I think, my first or second time seeing Dani and Jody team together. I feel like they also didn't get a big explanation as to why they started teaming together. Like,
they did not.
Anybody who knows me knows I love vignettes. I love that sort of like lore and backstory, telling those sort of things. And Dani was hanging out with Subculture, the British group, and Jody's a skateboarder. So I really just wanted to see, like, just even like one vignette of like Jody skateboarding down the street and she sees Danny doing graffiti art and then like pulls over and then they just start chatting and hanging out or whatever. Some sort of like, why are they together? Where did the name Spitfire come from? What brings that about? Because it's not a pun on their names. Like,
no, I was about to say they didn't even have a tag name until the match where they won the title. For the, you know, the months or two beforehand, they were just like a thrown together tag team, like pro wrestling loves to do. They're just like that person and that person. They're a team. Go. And then just on the match where they won the titles, they just suddenly have a team name. And I was just like, oh, I guess they're Spitfire now. Have they always been Spitfire? And we looked at it and they're like, no, they just started calling them that. It was very, the short version is you can tell Scott D'Amore is gone.
Yes. Yeah. There's a lack of like comprehension, comprehensive like long view on any of this. Things feel very like tossed together. Things feel very like of the moment, who's around. It feels like that's the problem right now, especially with the women's division. It just kind of feels of like, well, who's here? Who's in the building?
That's exactly what it is.
And that's
because Scott is gone.
I know, it's such a terrible way to feel because for so long it did not feel like that with the Knockouts division. It did not feel like that at all. Even with the downsides of the tag division, even with like some of the like lack of follow through there, which seems to just be epidemic of all women's tag divisions in like mainstream and like American Western pro wrestling. Even with the downsides of that, it still felt like there were ideas that were being played out and kind of a wait and see thing. This is very much like, I don't know, kids, we're putting on a show. Who's ready to wrestle?
Yeah, like historically, TNA/Impact has always had a very strong women's division. That's like one of their calling cards. It's pretty much that in the X division is like what you think of when you think of TNA or Impact or TNA if you go back even further. And I just did not get that sense in this pay-per-view at all. Like you said, it's just who's in the building? Who do we got? Go do a wrestle.
Yeah, we've got the basics. Like, here's two wrestlers that aren't really doing much, so they could be a tag team. We've got them gear that kind of, their gear is somewhat matching. And they got a team name. They got entrance music. Lars Fredriksson from Rancid came out. He was like,
it also seems very random.
Yeah, well, apparently it's because their entrance theme is a song from his new band, the Old Firm Casuals. So that's why he was, and he's a noted wrestling fan. You know, he's a good friend of CM Punk and all that. So I came away from this match really liking Spitfire, like feeling like, okay, yeah, there's some stuff here. I liked this match. We had a bunch of like showdown moments between Havoc, the powerhouse, and the other women. And there were instances in this match where I was watching and it's like, oh, Danny kind of feels like a young Havoc here. Jody kind of feels like a young Rosemary in that they're both like, quote unquote, alternative and Canadian. So there, it felt kind of a little bit generational here, even though I'm sure the age difference isn't that much of a difference. So I liked all that.
I can't figure out if Jody Threat is like 30 or 50.
Zero offense. The word that comes to mind is weathered. Maybe it's just a lot of skateboarding, not enough sunscreen. I don't know. But yeah, I think she's like 30, like early 30s. So there's a lot about Spitfire here that I like. They had a double team tandem finishing move, which is like a big check mark.
That
in
they
my
have
book.
Used before, and I do like that.
But again, the commentators didn't have a name for it. They didn't call it. They're just like, oh, Danny and Jody, and they get the pin. It's that kind of thing. But that, I guess that's what we feel like we're missing, especially with the return to Decay and the 4 minute Spitfire and all this, is like the attention to detail. Like, we got four women who can wrestle, and we got a match. Cool. But they didn't go any further than that. They haven't told us like anything about what's the hook for this one. What's interesting about these people? Hammer the branding a little bit more to really like make us care about Spitfire and make us think that they're a long-term project and they're not just going to lose the titles in a month and then split up again like all the other teams.
Did Lars even do anything? Like, Rosemary glared at him a couple times and I think he was like, yes, you should totally jump off the top rope. But like, he didn't do anything. Like, he didn't need to be out there. I could see coming out for the entrance, but he was ringside the whole time and then just never got involved.
Yeah, he didn't factor into it. He was just there as like a traditional sort of, you know, manager for support. I like that. it's important to set up, like, not every time somebody's at ringside, they're going to interfere or cheat in the match. That way, like, we're quote-unquote shocked when they do.
Yeah. I guess, but when it's, like, a celebrity person, so to speak, like, you kind of expect him to get involved. Like, that's why they're there. He's not, like, their normal manager who's out there every match. Like, he was here for the pay-per-view.
But that's all the more reason why it's, like, yeah. Like, that's all the more reason why you're like, okay, what's going to happen with this guy? Like, he's not usually there. So it's just funny to have, like, a guy just, like, hey, he's just, like, he's just really excited to be here. He's not going to do anything for us. He's just really excited to support us.
It's like a Make-A-Wish kid.
Rematch at the next show where Decay have some sort of goth musician in their corner.
You know what? This is just, like, you know, everyone's going to get their, like, pet musician who hangs out on the side. And only some of them will be willing to wrestle.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, the match itself was good. Good match. Went about 10 minutes. Spitfire gets the clean win, pinning Rosemary. After the match, Masha Slamovich walks out onto the entrance ramp. Another former champ. MKUltra will not be getting a shot anytime soon. Word on the street is Killer Kelly is off filming a movie or TV series or something. And she'll be back
later. Yeah, something like that.
So Masha walks out, and instead, she's joined by Alicia Edwards. And
which also seems like a very random pairing.
That is the epitome of random. Epitome.
Unless to your point, they did have vignettes on that one. Alicia has been constantly asking Masha to team with her, and Masha has not given an answer. She just, like, walks away and or says something in Russian and then walks away. So I guess this was the payoff to that. So they did actually somewhat set it up, but it was a very anticlimactic payoff. It's just like, oh, and here's Alicia. She's walking out too. Like, there was no, like,
here's next
there's
month's
no
opponents.
Like, Mega Powers handshake. There's no, like, let's go kick some ass. It was just like, oh, she's here too.
Hey, Harley, this is why we saw Alicia Edwards at the Collective. She's stalking Masha Slamovich.
Wait, no, we saw Alicia and Gail Kim hanging out at For the Culture.
Yeah, but Alicia was at least one of the other shows.
Okay. They were standing right behind us at For the Culture, scouting talent there for sure.
Oh, I'm sure. But yes, that's going to be my new headcanon.
If we see Jocelyn Navarro job to Jordan Grace on TV soon, then we know why.
Precisely. Hey, that'd be great. Jocelyn's on the uprise.
So, presumably that'll be next month. I mean, we never know with TNA. Either next month on the Impact Plus special, it'll be Masha and Alicia challenging, or maybe they'll drag that out to the next pay-per-view, because if not them, whom? Right?
And they definitely played it up like it's going to be Masha and Alicia, who also have a contractual rematch from MK Ultra, which I guess are just transferable. But that's, they're like, oh, yes, MK Ultra is still owed a rematch, and it's going to be Masha and Alicia. And I said, but Alicia's not in MK Ultra, but it's going to be Masha and Alicia. I'm like, all right.
There's an opportunity for intrigue here if they keep Masha and Alicia together and they, like, become closer, building to Killer Kelly's return. Because then it's like, what happens when Kelly comes back? Do they become a trio? Does Masha dump Alicia and get back with Kelly? Does she stick with Alicia and turn on Kelly? How do they handle that whole thing? I like that. At least we've got,
they become a throuple.
Yeah, with the system.
Yeah. I just thought it was like they never really wrote out Kelly. She just, like, vanished. There was no, like, kayfabe injury, kayfabe suspension, and no kind of, like, falling out and I'm going home. Like, she just vanished. Like, that's, I thought she left the company.
Well, that was a rumor going around.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a really sad thing, is that, like, with a character like Killer Kelly, you could do so many inventive ways of, like, even just giving her a hiatus. It's sad that they gave her the opportunity.
Yeah, she, like, the MK Ultra lost a match. I think they had, like, a semi-stare down, like, this was your fault. No, it was your fault. And then Kelly just walked up the ramp, never to be seen again. We got no explanation, so... Again, like you were saying, that attention to detail or lack thereof, like, what happened to this team? Like, why did they break up? Where is Kelly?
When Kelly returns, she reveals that, you know, Alicia and the system did something and bumped her off.
something, but I mean, at this point, I don't have any faith that they're going to do that. She's just going to reappear, and they're like, she's back. Please clap.
Yeah, so Scott D'Amore is gone, but Gail Kim's still there, so why does it feel so
That's
much...
That's what confuses me.
Why does the Nakas division feel so directionless right now?
Yeah, that's what confuses me, which makes me wonder how much influence or power Gail had or has. Because, like, as soon as Scott is gone, the whole division falls apart. Like, I thought Gail Kim was essentially running the Knockouts division kind of autonomously, maybe with some input from Scott, but I definitely thought that was her division to run, and now I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you take away the people that she was working with, the booking strategies that were probably in place with those women in, like, who were on the roster and active on the roster, she's been left to kind of like piecemeal together something. So even if she does have exact say, she doesn't have a whole lot to work with right now as far as like people that they were doing long-term booking with prior to like a couple months ago. I'm not saying that she probably doesn't have some kind of hamstrings on her right now, but like I could see why this rebuilding time is getting a little clumsy, but this is just especially clumsy right now.
It is. Like, none of the matches had any stories other than, like I said, it's their contractual rematch. That's it. Go have a wrestle. Like, there was no, like, real stakes. There was no personal investment for any of the wrestlers. It was very strange, which is, like, doubly weird because a lot of the men's matches were very personal. So, like, I don't know.
Well, our other women's match on the show was, of course, for the Knockouts Singles Championship, Jordynne Grace defending against Steph DeLander. Steph showed up out of nowhere a couple weeks ago on TV. They were having a gauntlet, sort of. We'll call it a gauntlet match for brevity's sake.
I was about to say, it's one of those TNA gimmick matches where, like, it takes 20 minutes to explain the rules. It was a gauntlet match.
She showed up and said, hey, she was somebody said, like, oh, I'm not ready to compete tonight. Was it Ash by Elegance?
I don't even remember.
Someone was scheduled to be in the match. Yeah,
I could be misremembering.
I think someone was scheduled to be in the match, and then they showed up and said, like, oh, I am not in the mood to wrestle, but I found somebody who will. And Steph DeLander showed up with Matt Cardona in her corner. They managed to steal the win. Steph becomes number one contender. That takes us to this match. Ash by Elegance was shown in the balcony watching this match. I'm surprised they're taking their time with Ash. Like, when she showed up at Hard to Kill in January, I thought it was going to be like the Dolph Ziggler treatment where, like, oh, she'll be challenging at the next pay-per-view. And instead, she's had like a little feud with Xia Brookside, and that's it, right?
Yeah, which, again, Xia was just apparently not in the building this week, so they didn't mention her at all. Like, that feud kind of concluded, and then Xia fell off the face of the earth, so I'm wondering what's going on there. But that's a really good point, that Ash is just sort of, I guess, waiting for her moment? I don't really know, but yeah, that's a good point.
I'd have to assume Slammiversary will get that one.
One would hope.
So Ash is in the balcony, Matt Cardona is not in the building. Word on the internet, he is injured, he's out. So instead, Steph has the Good Hands, John Skyler and Jason Hotch in her corner.
You knew their names because I didn't.
Do they have any connection with Cardona? Like, were they, like, working with him before he got injured? Are they friends with him?
I think they've teamed up a couple of times, but it's not like, you know, they're not like his lackeys or anything.
Yeah, so some like Brian Myers would make more sense here.
Yeah, like that would make sense. I don't know, but they just, again, it's who's in the building, go.
Yeah, and this one, that's my thing with this one, is it feels like, okay, they had this plan for how the match was going to go with Cardona at ringside.
Oh, you can definitely tell that the Good Hands are just swapped in for Cardona's spot. Like,
yeah,
they
did whatever he was supposed to do.
Yep.
And so for the first, what do I got? The whole match, whole thing, start to finish, went 12 minutes. So I'd say for the first 8 minutes, 9 minutes, good match. You know, Steph's got 8 inches on Jordynne. So we're seeing Jordynne, who's usually the big powerhouse in the match, getting powered around a bit, getting bullied by the bigger SDL. She's kind of dominating most of the match. I thought all of this was really good. I was enjoying the match until shenanigans.
Fine up until, yeah, the last, you know, 2-3 minutes or whatever. But, like, the match itself was good. It was fine. It was definitely better than the tag match.
And then shenanigans, as we were wont to do. So Jordan has Steph in a sleeper hold. Steph is fading. One of the goons jumps on the apron. Jordan, who should be smarter than this, lets go of the sleeper hold to go, like, yell at him. Instead of just, you know, keeping it locked on until Steph is, like, dead to the world. And then, like, hey, I win by forfeit or whatever. She lets go, and then we get the, oh, this guy is distracting the ref, and this guy throws the belt in the ring, and Steph tries to hit her, but she moves, and then she almost hits the ref, but then she doesn't. But then Grace does a back fist, and she does hit the ref. Now the ref's down, and now Steph hits her with the belt. And even
all of that, all of those shenanigans, I was still fine with, because that's, you know, it's wrestling. That happens. Everything up until what's about to happen, I was totally fine with. I'm like, oh, here we go, you know, heel shenanigans, and then...
So Jason Hotch strips the referee of his shirt. He puts it on. He's going to count to three. Obviously, that's not gonna, even if he's wearing the shirt, it's not going to be counted as legal, so I don't know what the point of that is. But he threatens it.
Sometimes it does. Okay. I don't know. Sometimes the shirt is authority, and sometimes it's not.
So he counts one, two. Before he can hit three, the lights go out. Oh, shit.
Oh, he counted three. They missed their cue.
Okay. He hits three, but he's not legal, so it doesn't matter. The lights go out. When they come back on... PCO for some reason. I don't know why. What is PCO?
For no reason whatsoever. Here's PCO. Or
is he feuding with the Good Hands? No, I thought he was feuding with Connor.
He's feuding with Con, yeah.
Anyway, PCO's here for some reason. He attacks the guys, double choke slam, double clothesline. Steph tries flirting with him. He knows sells. He's in full Kane mode here. PCO. Grabs her for a choke slam and then Big Con runs out, formerly Conor O'Brien of the Ascension, longest reigning NXT tag team champions. He runs out and he attacks PCO. Okay, sure. I guess they're feuding, so that makes sense to an extent. He knocks PCO to the floor. Jordan gets up in Con's face. And again, this is where it like goes. Like we're already off the rails. Now we're like off the rails and rolling down the hill into the ditch for me. Because, like, Jordan gets into Connor's face. Great. Makes sense. She does a lot of intergender wrestling. She's even done it in Impact. We've seen that.
Yeah.
Plus, this is her match. So she's trying to be like, you know, hey, this is my match.
But he just shoves her to the ground effortlessly. And then instead of her, like, getting up and, like, showing off her power and, like, you know, body slamming him or, like, throwing hands or anything, the only thing she can do, this tiny damsel in distress against this big, tough guy, the only way she can get any sort of advantage over him is to low blow him. And I'm like, that just makes her look like crap, because she's wrestled men before. She has to resort to a low blow.
I was expecting
fucking Connor.
I was expecting her to give him a Grace Driver.
Connor of the Ascension, like, it's not even like a former world champ or something, you know?
Yeah, I don't understand any of this. Like,
either. Because the shenanigans aren't done.
No, they're not done. But that's the problem. They're not done. We're only like 3/4 of the way through the shenanigans.
We're off the rail in the ditch and like catching fire.
My problem with this booking, as opposed to the tag match booking, is that like the tag match booking speaks of like we're using what we have. We don't have much of a plan, but we're doing what we can. We're trying to make the best of it. Like hold tight. Hopefully, a story will happen. This,
I can see that.
There are ideas, there's things for everybody here, except for who the match is supposed to be about. And that
exactly.
is the problem. And this is and they have done this in other promotions. Absolutely. WWE is like, I think that there was a run where like every women's tag match was interrupted by some form of chicanery in the like 24/7 title. So like, this is not without precedent in other places, but for a promotion that previously had the best, most like consistent, significant, and solid, like both roster and booking for their women for years, honestly, for years. This is absurd.
Because it's not going to go anywhere. It's PCO and Connor they have their little feud. So they had their weird little interaction in the middle of somebody else's match, and they're going to go off and do their thing. And then, you know, spoilers, after the low blow, I think the lights go out again. I'm pretty sure they do. They did the lights go out like 12 times.
Connor's about to snap her neck. The lights go out again. They come back on, and it's Sami Callihan. And he attacks the guys with a baseball bat and clears the ring. Steph is at ringside.
Like, now what the hell is he doing here? Like, this is also not his match. Like, why would he appear in the middle of a Jordan Grace match?
Steph's at ringside. It looks like she's going to, like, leave or get herself counted out. But there's, like, no heat on Steph at this point. Like, what has she done, really?
Like, nothing. People forgot it yeah. was her match.
So he grabs her and he throws her back into the ring for punishment. She takes a Grace Driver. And, again, dumbest thing in kayfabe for me is now a second referee runs out to count to three. It's like, where was the second referee?
Where was this referee this entire time?
The second the first referee went down, the second Connor showed up in the ring to call for it. Like, why now? Somebody, well,
because
somebody
now it's
is
time
watching.
To count
the it's so dumb. So Grace wins, and it's like, yay, we're supposed to be cheering, like, Jordan Grace, the hero who overcame the odds, I guess.
Nothing. Who overcame nothing.
Yeah, and then she celebrates with Sammy and Big Con, and it's like, is this going to, are they forming a faction? I doubt it. Is this, was the original plan that this was going to, you know, take the good hands out, put Cardona in, this was going to set up a feud between Cardona and PCO? Was that like plan A originally? Maybe?
I mean, even if it was, why are they doing this in the middle of a Knockouts title match? That's the part I don't get.
Yeah, do it after, have like a good match, and then after the match, Cardona and Steph double team Jordan, and then the lights go out, PCO shows up. Or whatever, right? Like, let the women have their
That would be less ridiculous. That would at least have some sort of semblance. But, like, just smack in the middle of the match, a completely unrelated match that nobody involved in the shenanigans had anything to do with the two people in the match. That's the part I don't get.
Yeah. That's what's the biggest problem for me. And also, like, I can't help but, like, step away from this match thinking, like, if I am trying to understand Steph DeLander's potential as a wrestler in TNA, or if I'm just not unfamiliar with her as a wrestler, and this is like I'm still getting to know her in the TNA universe, this match taught me nothing about her, showed me really nothing, and also weakened Jordan Grace in moments. And that's undermining in a way that, like, really deserves the few people you have left, the few, like, you know, big people you have left on your Knockouts roster right now, to diminish them in this way, like, in this match, like, you're already at a hurting point. You've got, like, an open bleeding wound. This is just, like, making it a little deeper. Like, the bleeding is going to come out a little faster now.
The part that frustrates me the most is all the shenanigans and the interference and the lights going out and they're fighting them and, oh, look who's back. You could have done that whole thing in any other match and it would have been exactly the same. Like, it had nothing to do with Jordan and Steph.
Do we think Steph is around to stay? Like, she's part of the Knockouts division now? Was this just a one-off appearance and now she's going to go back to the Indies and do other things?
That I don't know. I think she was going to stick around because of Cardona, but now that he's out, I think that whole thing might be up in the air. I would like her to stick around. Like, I like her as a performer, as a worker. But they gotta change something with the booking, because the TNA verse Steph DeLander, I don't care about. I mean, indie Steph DeLander is awesome.
Yeah, they haven't given you any reason to care.
Like, exactly.
I mean, and yeah, she hasn't been there for very long, so that could happen. But, like, this match could have been a really good opportunity to have some form of, like, interest. Like, you know,
just go out there, have a fucking banger.
Yeah.
Like, they beat the shit out of each other for 20 minutes. You can still have Jordan win, but Steph looks, you know, really strong in defeat. They took each other to the limit. You've established Steph DeLander as a threat. You've established her as a main event player, and you've put over Jordan even more because she turned away this now very credible threat. Instead, the whole thing just fell apart and Sammy's back. Like,
yeah.
Is that what we're supposed to take away from this? Like,
I'm
what?
Supposed to get excited for that?
I mean, I love Sammy. He's great. But, like, again, you could have done that in any match ever. Like, it had nothing to do with the match that was happening. That's the most frustrating part.
I mean, was him coming out as, I guess, kind of the save here? Like, was that supposed to make it so that, like, it's establishing that he is a face right now? Like, he's coming out as a face?
I guess. But like you were saying, the conquering hero, Jordan Grace, overcomes, what, a small shove from Khan? Like, nothing happened. They all fought with each other. Nobody fought with Steph or Jordan.
Yeah, we don't come out of this going, like, oh, I can't wait to see, like, what's next for Jordan or who's next for Jordan, because there was, like, no – Steph felt like Steph felt like desperation booking, like, we don't have anybody else.
Yeah, like, if Khan had come out first and equally inexplicably just beat the shit out of Jordan, and then Sammy comes in, somehow makes the save, you know, chases Khan off, and the now has the shit beaten out of her Jordan, then rallies back for a win, that's still something. But, yeah. They all fought amongst themselves while Jordan and Steph just sort of watched.
Yeah, that's it. It's just messy. It was like, it was overbooked and underbooked and like half baked and all kinds of bad cooking terminologies here, but like, it wasn't even fun. Like, I guess it could be fun if you did not give a shit about the Knockouts division watching this and like, you just really wanted to see these other guys. But like, if you are someone like me who genuinely enjoys the Knockouts division of TNA, like, this was just kind of a messy bummer.
My thoughts/concern/fear is, if you look at all the other matches on the card, like I said, they were all like very personal. They were all like, you know, big stories, long builds, you know, it's a blood feud. It's personal. And this one kind of wasn't. They're just like, it's a title match. They're going to fight for the title. And I'm terrified that whoever's booking it right now, I think it's Tommy Dreamer, is just like, we need to do all this, you know, big reveals and returns and setup, and we got to put that in the middle of a match. Let's do that one. It's got nothing going on. Like, you couldn't really put it in the middle of, like, any of the other matches. So instead they just put it in the rant. Like, you could have equally put it in the fucking tag match, because that also had no stakes. But that's kind of what I'm terrified of right now, is they're just like, yeah, this has nothing. Let's add some fun to it. Let's add some returns and some pops and some whatever. And like, dare I say Russo-esque?
Yeah, that's like the big problem, right? Like, it's got that scent about it. And it's gonna be a
swerve, bro.
A whiff of the Russo-esqueness is immediately going to be something that I'm going to be turned off by.
I've got several years invested at this point, so I'm still gonna give them the benefit of the doubt and see where they go with this next couple of weeks, the next monthly pay-per-view, for like next monthly special or whatever it's called. But yeah, like, this is like the lowest I have felt about the Knockouts division in a very long time. That, for all the ups and downs and craziness and Impact and TNA and Impact and TNA again, and their empty arenas, and they're on the Pursuit Channel and all this other shit, like, they have always had a very strong women's division, and it really just feels like they don't anymore.
And I just don't get the sense that they're in a hurry to correct that.
It definitely, like, in addition to Russo-esque scent, I definitely got a Tony Khan-esque scent that, like, we have to have a women's match, so here you go. Like, it felt like an obligation rather than actual stories they wanted to tell.
Yeah, and that's, that's a big, big bummer.
That was Saturday. Sunday, it was AEW Dynasty, the very first AEW Dynasty. If you're listening to this episode, you know, 10 years from now, going back through our archives, listen to stuff, and be like, oh yeah, the very first Dynasty. Wow, what a pillar of the AEW pay-per-view schedule that has been. It all started here. If you don't remember it, then what? I don't know. What happens? It's AEW in 2024 as we record this. So again, if you listen to this 10 years from now and you're like, damn, AEW is great now. I love how like half the matches on the card are women. It's so cool. This is back in the dark days when we only had two women's matches per card.
Hey, better than one. Better than one. I mean, I can still vividly recall the days when we had one women's match on our pay-per-view cards. So, this is still, we're still an improvement, adding two women's title matches on the card, and on the actual show and not just pre-show. You know what, before we launch into this, just really quickly, Harley, how are you feeling about this like new AEW pay-per-view schedule?
I am a firm I'm always less is more. All aspects of wrestling. I'm like, my ideal wrestling promotion, you know, a 1 hour weekly show, maybe four pay-per-views a year, a singles title, some tag titles. That's it. That's it. Like, again, I watch an AEW pay-per-view like this, and I'm just like, every single match is a title match. Like, what the? The Fallen Contest is for that, and I'm like, for the what? For the Continental Championship? That's still an international championship. The TNT, the TBS, the ROH Trios titles, the, like, I'm like, get a life. Like, none of them feel important, because there's so many.
Yeah, when we started off, when this promotion started, and it was a little, you know, in early promotion tendencies, it was lean on belts. It felt like those belts meant more. And now we have so many belts, and we have ROH belts that we're defending, and we have international belts that we even feature on shows sometimes. So it's like, it's one of those things where, like, I'm getting a little belt fatigue as far as, like, figuring out who's challenging for what. It is starting to mean less, which means that feuds and storylines mean more, which is cool, you know, like, except that when you have so many pay-per-views, you only have so much time to set up real feuds and real stories. And so it does end up being very much like, okay, well, we're going to have a pay-per-view where most of the challenges are just four titles, kind of like what we were talking about with the TNA one. Although in the case of this pay-per-view, in the case of Dynasty, not quite as bad. There was some setup here. And I will admit, I'm a little bit behind on my AEW in general. I was really good at following Dynamite week to week. I've been falling off a little bit, and not even because I haven't been interested. I just, after WrestleMania weekend, I kind of needed a whole detox from wrestling. So yeah, been off for like 2 weeks from Dynamite. And in that time, a lot of things have happened, but also some things have just continued the course, including the setup for Willow versus Julia Hart.
Yeah, I can't even get into the whole, they've been feuding since the fall in different capacities, right? Because Julia sprayed the black mist at Willow and her partner Sky Blue, and then we got like months of like, are they turning heel? Are they not turning heel? Are they with Julia? Are they against her? And then finally Sky started working with Julia, and they're like hanging out together, but Sky's not part of House of Black, and then Willow started teaming with Chris Statlander. And Stokely Hathaway joined, and it's like, is he heel? Is he not heel? Are they, what's happening here? I don't know. We finally get to Willow versus Julia for the TBS title. One-on-one. What's the deal with house rules? That's like if it's a House of Black match, then the challenger gets to choose their own stipulations?
No, because in this case,
Yeah, because Willow got to choose the house rules, and her rules were Sky and Chris are banned from ringside.
Yes. Yeah, and that was, like, the only change.
Yeah, which, fine, I guess.
Yeah, okay. All right, so no interference will happen during this match.
From those two, right? It's still, by specifically naming two people, you still leave the door open for like somebody else. Mercedes is going to interfere. Somebody else is going to interfere. They didn't. But like, if they were trying to send the message that like this would be a clean one, one-on-one, it didn't really do that job.
Yeah. No, but like, fortunately, it was.
Yeah. We had Stokely on commentary. We had Mercedes Moné watching from backstage. And this was about as straightforward as you get. It was a 6-minute match, and Willow just beat her clean as a sheet.
Yeah, and she just and Willow. What I kind of liked about this match is its simplicity, in that Julia is smaller than Willow, and Willow has a lot of power. So in the end, Willow did what Willow needed to do to win, which was just bomb the shit out of Julia because she's big and powerful. And sometimes wrestling works in that like id way of just like, yes, big wrestler, slam, littler wrestler. And my like, just like dummy brain is like, yes, this works for me. I am very happy about this. It was fine. It was perfectly good. No, like, honestly, no complaints. Was this like match of the year? No, but it's a clean, like easy victory. Like, not easy, but, you know, it's a clean, relatable victory in some ways because we want Willow to win. it wasn't the best match for Julia, certainly. It wasn't really a showcase for her, but like it did what the story needed to do, which is change these belts. I think it gets more interesting from here, obviously, right? With Mercedes in the picture. I don't know where we go with that challenge, but it's interesting to build off of Mercedes and Willow's previous match and see what like comes of that in AEW. So yeah, I'm about where this story is going. This match was it was a stepping stone. And poor Julia Hart for having to kind of be a stepping stone now, because like they've been doing great work with her. I've been really impressed by her growth as both a wrestler and like a character. But it feels like she is soon to be not forgotten, but you know what I mean. In the AEW way of doing things with their women's division, she will no longer have a TBS championship, so we might see her once a month on one of the three televised programs.
Yeah, for such a 6-minute match, babyface wins clean. It wasn't as cathartic as I might have expected it to be. Like I might have thought like, oh, this is it. Like we're finally this like heel that we hate, who's been pulling all this shit for months and having outside interference from like her girlfriend and her guy friends and all these other people and spitting mist at people and turning the lights on and off after all this nonsense. She's finally just like getting her comeuppance. I wasn't like, yeah, finally, she's getting what she's coming for. I'm just like, oh, it's over. Okay, cool, I guess. Yay, Willow wins. And for Willow, who, like, I love, we all love, the whole world loves, seeing her finally win gold for the first time in AEW didn't feel that exciting either, because, again, it's one of three women's titles in this company. You know, if there's only the one AEW Women's Championship and like Willow finally wins it after 4 months of like chasing like a heel and winning it, I feel like there's a lot more, you know, we're freaking out in the way people were freaking out for Swerve, and people were excited. I saw tons of social media posts of people being thrilled that Willow's like a title holder in a big company, but I don't know, like I wasn't watching like crying like, oh my god, she finally won it. I was just like, oh cool.
Yeah, I wanted it to be a bigger moment than it was, but that's the problem with the TBS championship, honestly, because like even when Chris got it and it was that like, you know, quick clip around where like I forget Jade had wrestled, but like Jade won and then Chris like returned and then quickly got the belt, because even that moment I was like waiting for and thirsting for, and I think a lot of us were, and then it happened and it was kind of like, okay, I just kind of wish it was a bigger thing. And I think that there's a ceiling to the TBS championship in that way. There's only so excited we can get. It feels like this chase has been happening for a really long time. And also, I felt bad for Julia because it didn't feel like this was a part of her story. She ended up feeling like the obstacle in the way of Willow getting this belt to further the story with her and Mercedes, which is going to be the case when it's like someone like Mercedes and she's getting that like Poochie booking where it's like, when Mercedes is not around, people have to be asking, where is Mercedes Moné? And it's like, I like Mercedes a lot. I think she has incredible star power. She's going to do great things in this women's division. She is clearly forcing Tony's hand to like create more and more space for the women's division in AEW, which is great. However, it's gonna overshadow other people, including current champions who were getting a big bump until this big star arrived.
Honestly, the title is always the name of the belt is an albatross for me too, because as soon as you put like the TBS championship, I'm like, oh, hey, we got two titles on the roster. One is the World Women's Championship and the other is the Costco belt. The other is Subway Presents the Eat Fresh Women's Championship, right? Like, it's just right away I'm like, I don't take this seriously.
Well, yeah, the men have their TNT championship too, so like obviously like you have your
I don't
TV
really
belts.
Take that seriously either, but TNT also, like, you know, it sounds like Boom, so that's kind of cool. TBS sounds like Tubbs.
Yes, which sounds like Tubbs, which is why we call it the Tubbs belt. And like, I can't stop calling it the Tubbs belt, even though like people I've liked have held that belt. People I really, wrestlers I really love have held that belt now. And it's like, you're right. But it's just the convention of a TV belt. I'm not too bothered by it. I think the issue is that like the booking strategy here is framed around Mercedes kind of chasing this now that Willow has it. And there's two things that are going to be kind of a clumsy feeling here. One, again, Julia Hart has kind of just been like, just punted out of this picture now. It's not about Julia anymore. That could be wrong. She could be on Dynamite this week, like full force, ferocious, casting witchy spells. Who knows? The bigger thing is, this has been brought up in social media, so I'm kind of curious how you feel about this. Mercedes Moné comes in, a star of this caliber, and she is going to be chasing the women's TV title?
That's the biggest, weirdest thing about all this. I'm already seeing people being like, Willow and Mercedes could be the first women to main event a pay-per-view. They could main event Double or Nothing. But I'm like, is the TBS title going to main event a pay-per-view? I can't see that. Even more so than Tony Khan having women main event, I can't see that happening. It's so weird. And yes, Christian, Adam Copeland have held the TNT title, the male equivalent, but it's because it feels like they're at the tail end of their career. I don't expect to see Adam or Christian holding the top men's singles title promotion, because they know they're on the tail end, and right now they're doing their thing, helping elevate the young talent, the next generation. Mercedes should not be in that position yet. She shouldn't be at the tail end helping elevate the young talent. So in a sense, that's cool. I really don't know how this Double or Nothing match is going to go. Is Mercedes going to win the TBS title and Willow only holds the belt for 4 weeks? That's weird. Is Willow going to beat Mercedes in Mercedes' first match? That would be cool. I don't know. I guess the intrigue is that Chris Statlander has to get involved and somebody's turning heel. One of these three has to turn heel at Double or Nothing, and that'll be the factor in who walks away with the belt.
Man, I don't want anyone to turn heel.
Okay, the lights go out, they turn back on, Britt Baker's there, and just no contest.
I mean, there's a lot of people where there's kind of big question marks, right? We still haven't gotten return of so many people. We're still wondering where Britt is, where Jamie is. There's any number of people who could be thrown into this to throw a wrench and kind of not force their hand to book any of these women into heel turns. Is Mercedes a face?
Ostensibly. And I've seen people complain she's such a shitty baby face. She calls herself the CEO. She gets a title shot, even though she hasn't wrestled a single match in the company. And I'm like, yeah, I think that's the point.
Yeah, so I don't...
She's ostensibly a babyface right now because we're happy to see her and we're glad that she's here. But I do not think she's a long-term babyface. I think she is going to be a clear top heel in the division, along with Tony, by June.
Yeah. Because everything about the presentation doesn't speak to me as obviously we were going to be excited to see her. Obviously audiences were going to be stoked to see her, and it's a huge get for AEW, and it's great to see her kind of locked down into this promotion. But none of the booking speaks to being we're excited to see her and you're going to love her and want everything that she wants, because honestly, who wants to root for a CEO? Who's sitting at home being like,
I don't know. For some reason, a lot of people want to root for Elon Musk. Some reason, a lot of people love to root for CEOs. I don't know why.
That's not me.
But no, I think she's going to go the Okada route. I think she's here, but she's going to relish getting a chance to be a heel and use her position, use her backstage influence and power to really elevate some of these other women. Women like Willow, which is why I'm thinking maybe she does lose to Willow. Maybe she loses clean. You know, maybe Willow just catches her with a small package out of nowhere and it's one of those shock ones and Mercedes is like, oh my God. Or, yeah, maybe Chris turns and aligns with Mercedes, or, you know, Mercedes puts together her own little faction, something to that extent. I just don't really see Mercedes holding the TBS title. That's the biggest thing in it, which doesn't make sense to me.
I cannot conceive of a situation where they have a match and Willow wins again, because that was not the intention when they last faced each other, and this has to be some form of redemption / reset for Mercedes versus Willow. I do not see her losing here. Does she win by pseudo nefarious means? Does she win because Chris sabotages Willow and maybe Mercedes is not involved, but benefits from Chris's betrayal? That's possible. That's entirely possible. I would kind of hate to see it. I don't know what you do with a heel Statlander. And Stokely would have to, like, pick a side. So, I yeah. But there are questions there, and they're interesting questions. I'm interested to see where it goes. So we might be skeptical, or we might have, like, curiosities, but, like, it's cool that we have questions to ask, and there are various directions that it could go, because there wasn't always that case for the TBS championship. I mean, when we were stuck in the long, long winning streak of Jade Cargill, the only question was, okay, who's next?
Yeah, I like that. I've gone through all of the scenarios I can think of in my head, and each one of them I'm like, but I don't know. I don't think that really, So that's good. That's good that I'm like, I really don't know how this one's going to play out, and I know how I want it to play out, and that's good too, right? Like, I'm going to this match, and I'm like, I want Willow to win. I want Willow to win, I don't want her to turn heel. I think that's the dumbest move in the world. Sorry, Dawn. I don't want Willow to turn heel. So,
oh, no. Heel Willow is a bad idea.
So, yeah, I would love to see... I don't know. Yeah, I surprise me. Surprise me in a good way.
I mean, it's cool that we're interested. It's cool that they've set up some intriguing things here. I hope they don't completely lose track of Julia, because I was just really starting to, like, get into what Julia was bringing. And we talked about this during the draft last week. But, like, I think that they've done a really, like, decent job. And she has done an amazing job of really making her mark as an up-and-coming wrestler while holding a championship, which is a difficult thing to do. So, yeah, I'm hoping out of all of this, we don't lose Julia, especially if they don't do the thing where they just, like, disappear her into, like, nothing land for the next, like, couple of months.
Although supposedly she's injured, so there is a very good chance that she'll be taken off TV just because of that.
I mean, if she's injured and she needs to heal, then of course. And, like, oftentimes this type of opportunity gives a wrestler some time off that they desperately need for any number of reasons. So I'm not knocking it. I just, you know, when Britt has been injured back in the way back when she was injured, they still had a lot of fun with it, and they made her a big presence even injured. It would be cool to make sure that we still did that for the women who are still around, but obviously they're not doing that because they have so many people right now. The roster is real deep, and they have the people that they want to focus on. The roster is getting deeper, but the amount of time featured on the average AEW program hasn't gone sizably up, so that has to change for everyone to get a fair shake.
Our second and final women's match on the show was for the AEW Women's Championship. Timeless Toni Storm with Luther and Mariah May taking on Thunder Rosa, another former champ. Toni was, this week, RJ said he got Toni to watch Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, the 1962 Betty Davis film. That was Toni's makeup reference point, FYI.
Can you imagine my delight at this? Because I was so delighted. I was so delighted. Like, absolutely, RJ. I am so pleased that you get to just, like, play in the sandbox of vintage Hollywood tropes. It makes so much fun sense for her to, like, go the Baby Jane route. I kind of wish, and I loved it as a reference to just face paint in general, because she's going up against Thunder Rosa, who was noticeably without. And so it was a really interesting, like, inversion, and that played into the like, tension in their feud, which I thought worked really nicely. So good way to use aesthetics as also mirroring storytelling.
Yeah, Rosa comes out. She's wearing a full mask along with her gear. They get a stare down in the ring. She takes off her mask to reveal that she's not wearing the half skeleton makeup that she normally wears. Instead, just has some blue makeup around her eyes instead. Commentary kind of bungled this one. Like, they didn't do a great job of selling, like, what that meant or the significance of it. All I could think to read into it was Rosa saying, like, I'm done with, like, the makeup and the layers or whatever. Like, I'm here to, like, to wrestle straight up. And if you still want to wear all this makeup and all this costuming or whatever, then, like, that's why you're going to lose, I guess.
Yeah, I felt like that could have been a stronger thing sold on commentary, and commentary really botched that. There at one point, one of the commentators, I don't remember who it was, referenced Thunder Rosa's look as, like, Princess Jasmine-like, and I was like, no, because it's bluish, Like, what?
That's what Nigel, yeah, well, I saw what Nigel was saying. The color of the gear and stuff kind of looked like Jasmine's outfit.
Okay, sure. I guess. But for me, a much more notable thing of, like, without the face paint, like, what does that mean for Thunder Rosa? What does that signify? And there's so many beautiful metaphors that you could come up with, so many ways in which that is her stepping up and coming out of hiding, her no longer needing a mask in order to, like, be the, like, warrior wrestler that she can be. The story here being that she never actually lost the belt. And she was injured and had to relinquish her title because of injury. And so to come back and challenge for the title that she never actually, like, lost, there's some metaphor to work in the lack of face paint in there that they didn't really sell as well. And I wish they had. That being said, I thought it was really great. I liked that as a note in her aesthetic story, as well as what Toni Storm was doing. So I thought, like, aesthetically, with that narrative, really great. Match itself, totally good. Totally decent.
Yeah, we've complained about some of Timeless Toni's matches in the past. Like, her first couple as Timeless Toni were very, like, I drew the comparison to Thunder Kitty. Like, very, felt like comedy matches. Like, we're doing, like, a vaudeville performance here. This felt more like a wrestling match. Toni was wrestling more aggressive than usual. She was wrestling more heel, which had been a complaint of mine in the past, too, which was, like, she's supposed to be the heel in the scenario, but everybody, like, is entertained and, like, having fun with, like, the goofiness and putting, like, the serving tray down her pants and stuff. This was like, okay, no, she's, like, wrestling like a heel. Rose is wrestling like a baby face. Rose was gone for so long. That's a breath of fresh air to see, like, this great wrestler in this big slot here. I'm excited about all that. And, yeah, I don't know. I guess that's kind of where it ends for me.
Yeah.
We get the usual. I came away from this not loving this and still being a little sick of Timeless Toni. And maybe it was just, like, all the outside of the ring shenanigans. Maybe that's what, like, because I'm tired of that stuff, regardless of who it is.
When yeah.
There's a lot of, especially after just watching TNA Rebellion the night before, as we covered.
That would absolutely, yeah. I had a day in between these things, so I was a little reset. I think it would have been a lot worse had I not been. I might have felt similarly, but I really like the Timeless Toni Storm gimmick, and I still am into what they're doing. I am genuinely more interested in what they are setting up for potentially Forbidden Door with Mina. That to me involves layers of story with Toni and Mariah and allegiances in there, and also I think it'll be hopefully a really dynamite match. This one was really good, and I was just really glad to see Thunder Rosa again. Like, I know she's been wrestling on Collision mostly, but, like, I haven't been watching Collision, and it was nice to see her, like, in motion in an AEW pay-per-view. I really like Thunder Rosa. It's great to see her back. This was a good match. I'm glad that the interference and other shenanigans did not prevent from them having really stellar moments in this and getting and allowing Thunder Rosa to shine. But yeah, I can feel like this is also being a little overshadowed by other things that they have in place. That's kind of the story of these matches, of both of these women's matches. Like, there are bigger things or flashier things to come. This is a title challenge match that has been set up, maybe short term, maybe long term in the case of Julia and Willow. But in both cases, it just kind of has to happen.
Yeah, so Deonna Purrazzo comes down to ringside. She ends up taking out both Mariah and Luther. Toni hits Storm Zero. Rosa kicks out, but then she pulls on the ring apron. Referee's distracted. Kicks Thunder Rosa between the legs and hits another Storm Zero for the pin. Presumably, Rosa goes to the back of the line now. We're probably going to see a Rosa-Deonna feud, which will be great from the in-ring perspective, and I'll be interested to see which one of them turns heel out of that scenario, or if either of them does. Maybe they just or have a baby-faced rivalry feud.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised that we didn't see Mina Shirakawa in any sort of capacity here to further that story. I guess that's going to play out on TV. Like you said, Forbidden Door, June 30th. Presumably it'll be Mina versus Toni at that one, we're guessing, for the title.
That's my assumption. It's interesting then because we have a pay-per-view in between with this, like, new, improved, crowded pay-per-view system where we have Double or Nothing coming up in, like, who's going to be the challenger then.
Do we maybe, yeah, I guess they can go a couple different ways. We could get, Rosa could get some sort of rematch at Double or Nothing since she lost via, like, cheating here. Or maybe if they feel really strongly about Will and Mercedes, we don't have the women's title defended at Double or Nothing. We do, like a tag match, like Tony and Mariah against Mina and somebody. You know, something else to get us a step closer to Forbidden Door.
Yeah, I mean,
or do we do the Casino Battle Royale? What's the deal with that one again? They do that like every year, but it's like sometimes it's men, sometimes it's women, sometimes it's tag teams.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes it is. I mean, they've done at least one or two women's Casino Battle Royale. This would be a really great time to do it, considering everyone that's in place.
They've done men.
They've done men.
2019, 2020, 21, 20, 22. They've done women 2019 and 2021. Yeah, so they haven't had a women's Casino Battle Royale in 3 years.
Oh, well, there you go. It's time for it.
Yeah, that would make sense, and they could use that as an opportunity. Oh, and throw a bunch of Stardom wrestlers in there. That's fun. That's my pitch. There you go, Tony.
Yeah, I mean, that makes as much sense as anything else, and also gives you an opportunity to, like, show off how deep your roster has gotten between your AEW folks and your ROH folks. Like, there's a lot of women right now. Like, this should be exciting. We should be excited. Like, this is what we've been wanting. We've been wanting more women in the picture. And from a long view, say you zoom out and you're looking at the whole class picture, there's a lot. But it does still feel like we are in this, like, okay, so we got the three, at most four people involved in this one belt story, and we've got the, like, three or four people at most involved in this belt story, and then everybody else has to wait their turn.
Yeah, because we only have the two principal storylines that get, like, the pay-per-view time and, like, the big time. I'm not sitting around right now going, like, oh, I can't wait to see what Serena Deeb does next, or I can't wait to see, you know, what the plans are for Yuka Sakazaki, because it's like, well, if it's not, there's no room for her in the title picture right now, so I guess nothing.
Yeah, I mean, if you aren't a part of those two storylines, your chances of getting featured are reduced to being fodder for one of the women in those storylines, right? So, like, you know, if they need Mariah May to beat someone in the lead up to Tony versus Mina, then they will pull out one of the women that they have. But, like, yeah, it's we're just in this, like, cycle. And, like, yes, obviously the men have more belts, so they have more stories with those belts, but there are plenty of feuds that are happening that are not title specific in AEW. We need to make a little more space in AEW for women's stories to not have to revolve around one specific belt, because it keeps us it keeps us from being locked into that routine. But with only so much TV time given, there's not a whole lot of opportunity to set it up.
Okay, that's our show. Thank you for listening, folks. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, or Patreon at Grit Glitter Pod. If you support us on Patreon, you get a weekly newsletter. You get archived episodes of this podcast. Every Saturday, we post an old episode. All of the first three seasons of Grit and Glitter is available now. Season 4 is being uploaded as we speak. Last week, we finally posted a new episode of Women's Wrestling Entertainment, episode 12. So you have $5 right now, and you got 12 hours of bonus podcasts, unavailable anywhere else. Me and Em channeling the history of women in WWE. We're all the way up to December 1993.
It is fascinating, and I've said this before, but I'm learning so much, and I highly recommend checking it out. Even if you just subscribe to us for a month and give us your $5, you will get so much out of just the first 12 episodes. More are to come. I have promised Harley I would stay on track with the recording schedule as much as possible. It is my fault we don't release them more often, not Harley's, who does all the exhaustive research that has been done on this show. So I highly recommend checking it out. There is always a potential for more stuff on our Patreon in months to come. We've got other exciting things happening with the show. So just remember, when you support us, on Patreon. We use the money to offset our recording costs, but the vast majority of the money that we receive through Patreon goes right back into the wrestling ecosystem. We love to sponsor our friends. We love to sponsor our friends on the East Coast, on the West Coast, in the South, in the North. When we make friends, we like to give them our money so that they can continue making the wrestling that you enjoy. So it's a win, win, win. And there are very few of those in life. So please make this one of them. Subscribe to our Patreon. Help us help others.